The following paid program does not necessarily reflect the views or opinions of the staff and management of Tri-Scepter Productions or the Superhuman Channel. Tri-Scepter Productions and the Superhuman Channel are not responsible for any claims, warranties, or guarantees made during this program.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled.
From the Studio Gym, where excuses never apply.
It's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
That's right. This is the strongest radio allowable by law. But you know what? If those laws change, we may not be able to talk about the things that we talk about on the show with regularity. I just want to remind everybody to visit the Life Extension Foundation Legislative Action website, which is lef.org/LAC. Often, they are updating the website. I've gotten some emails saying that a lot of the new FDA stuff is not up there yet. I got an email from Dr. Michael Smith yesterday saying that they are updating the website. Check back often. And if you haven't been there recently, get there and let your representative know how you feel about a lot of these issues, especially the ability for supplement companies, food manufacturers, and even shows like this to be able to talk about the science behind food products and supplements, because the FDA wants to squelch us so that only the pharmaceutical companies can talk about this science. Also, just want to let you know, I am sticking with my promise. I have been in the gym training. I am already down to 212 pounds. I'm repartitioning. I'm using some intermittent fasting. We're going to do a show revisiting intermittent fasting later this week. You're not going to want to miss it. But I'm walking the walk again, and I got to tell you, I feel great. So there's something to it. Okay. First hour, we're going to be talking with Dr. Matt Andry. I have received emails from those of you who heard Dr. Cordain rail against milk and especially raw milk. We're going to be discussing some of his opinions. And then later in the show, we have Stephen Guinet on, and we're going to be talking about the linkage between reduced reward dieting and obesity. My guest this first hour has been on the show before. You love him. I know you do. You emailed me and said, have that doctor who knows all about milk back on to rebuttal Dr. Cordain's statements, and that's Dr. Matt Andry. How you doing, Matt?
I'm great, Carl. How are you, my friend?
You are now officially the doctor who talks about milk on my show. How about that one?
Huh? Hey, I like that. I like that. It's a good topic.
There you go. Look, we still talk about Johnny Appleseed. All he did was drop some seeds in the ground. You know what I mean?
Hey, that's right. Exactly.
So, anyway. Exactly. You know, in listening to, re-listening to the interview with Dr. Cordain, I heard him say one thing that kind of gave him a little bit of a back door, if you will, in this whole discussion, and that is, you know, you have to really be careful where you get your milk, he said. You have to choose where you get your milk. But he railed against milk completely. He said all dairy is bad. And yeah. I have the actual snippets. We're going to talk about that, and then later in the show, we're going to talk about something even newer that's just come to the forefront with the assault on milk, and especially raw milk, yet again. And what is that, Matt?
Right. That's the one of Cordain's arguments against milk. And before I even say that, Carl, I want to say, you know, as that you feel too, man, I feel a big debt for Dr. Cordain and his work. Because, man, he really helped turn the corner on the food pyramid junk we were being fed for the last 50 years. And helped open a lot of people's eyes, and was out there in the forefront really. And I'm grateful to him for that.
Much respect for the guy. And I even said it during the show, as you'll see, the only one area that he and I disagree about is milk, but everything else I agree with him about.
Right. And you know, I think the thing is that it's not just him. I mean, I do it, you do it. Sometimes we marry ideas.
Uh-huh.
And it's kind of like a girlfriend that your friends don't like. If they pick on him too much, then it just digs your heels in and you start dating her even if you don't like her.
Right.
And I think that's what happens sometimes to, you know, you get in a position and you've defended it before and somebody brings up an argument. But the way humans operate, we operate on what we believe, not what we think we know. And what we know changes all the time as you get new information. So, I mean, I hope to goodness I'm not practicing the same way in 5 years I am now. Otherwise, I didn't learn very much.
I've backpedaled on this show and said, you know, I said this on a show. It turns out I was wrong. Science is constantly unfolding. I think of this whole process kind of like going to the bakery. You know, mm-hmm. if you go to the bakery too early, the bread isn't cooked yet. You'll just walk out with dough. But you exactly. may like it. You may eat it and say, well, that was really good. I enjoyed that. You know, the guy who gets there an hour later, he ends up with bread. It's like, you know, it's constantly unfolding and you have to be willing to go back and say, you know I said unabashedly, blah, 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 but I was wrong. That's yeah. part of science.
You know, for 12 years now, my patients have constantly been teaching me on a daily basis that what I thought yesterday doesn't fit here.
That's right.
And
That's
I'm
right.
so grateful to them for that. You right. know, but it's, I guarantee you, man, the minute I come up with something that ought to be universal, the next patient walks in and blows it up. And yeah. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But talk about this new thing that's just coming out now to scare people about milk
yeah,
and
yeah.
milk products again.
Well, one of Dr. Cordain's arguments is that one of the elements in milk is called beta-cellulin. And this is a factor, a protein, that will interact with our epithelial growth factor receptors. And there's so much more of this in milk than there is in our saliva, our tissues, meat, blood, that he says we just get our receptors inundated with this, and he thinks that's a reason that we've seen studies that are, you know, correlating milk and risk of cancer. And those studies are out there. I'll remind people that there are also a lot of studies that show the more milk you drink, the less cancer you have.
Right. Let's just take a minute now that we've kind of opened this up. And discuss this. Epithelial growth factors cause the collateral change in the vasculature of the body, cause new blood vessels to sprout, correct?
That's one of the things they do, absolutely.
Okay. And the correlation to cancers and tumors is that cancers, like every other cell in the body, need to be fed in order to keep growing and stay alive, right?
Yep, that's
okay.
right.
And one of the therapies that are used in tumors is if you can choke off the blood supply to the tumor, you kill the tumor, correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. So the correlation between epithelial growth factors and cancers is simply that cancers need blood to flourish, mm-hmm. and epithelial growth factors increase blood flow by increasing the collateralization of blood vessels. Would you say that's an accurate statement?
That is accurate. I will say that those factors, I think, do sometimes a lot more than.
Well, that's what I was just
going to
say. That's what I was going to say. No, wait.
Yeah.
Just stick me one second. Now, could the same argument not be made for breathing? Let's look at. Okay, so oxygen. Cancer cells. Most cancer cells need oxygen. There are. Hyperoxic cancers out there hypoxic cancers that actually grow in the absence of cancer. But the majority of cancers need oxygen, don't they? Don't they, Matt?
You know, Aristotle said many thousands of years ago, the poison is in the dose. You can take any substance, air, water, lead, and you can have a certain amount that you absolutely need and a certain amount that too much will kill you.
But you see where I was going with that, right?
I see where you're going with it.
So basically what we could say, well, you know, cancers need oxygen, and oxygen causes the proliferation of cancer. So what we need to do is we need to cut off your oxygen, but at the same time we're going to kill your brain, your heart, and everything else.
Exactly. You know, these growth factors, it probably is true that upregulating growth factors too much will raise risk of cancer. But everything has to be taken in context, and there's a lot of context left out of that argument when it comes to milk, raw milk, what type of milk, what source of food the cows that they're eating have.
Bingo.
And you know, I'm like, I just don't believe that there is such a thing as a perfect diet, Carl. And if there is one, mine's sure different than yours, and mine's
right.
probably different now than it's going to be in 6 months. And the goal is not to get perfect. You know why? Because I don't care if it's in 10 years, 50, or 100 years, one of these days, you and I are checking out.
No matter what.
That's
right.
That's right. And we don't have to have anything perfect. We have to have an environment that approximates our genetic tendencies enough to allow us to do the things we want to do for somewhere from 80 to 120 years.
Right.
Period. And
okay.
So, you know, a lot of diets can work. One of the big arguments, of course, about this was that, well, milk's just not paleo. Which is real arguable, too, in my opinion. But on the beta-cellulin side, you know, the big factor that people should know is that conjugated linoleic acid really decreases the effect of the beta-cellulin. And cancers, you know, humans, we estimate, make upwards of 5 to 50,000 cancers every day.
Right.
The immune system finds them, checks them out before they even get to a cellular level sometimes, and it's no problem.
Right.
So it's allowing the immune system to work is your far away best protection. Everything else just needs to be in balance to let that happen. You need those positive growth factors, and you need the ones that slow them down.
Well, and Matt, Cordain is a staunch opponent of IGF-1, and that's another one of his reasons he doesn't like milk.
Probably doesn't like insulin or any growth factors, period.
Well, but the point I was going to make was, when is IGF-1 the highest?
At night.
Well, no. I'm sorry. I misposed the question. At what point in life is our body bathed in IGF-1 and growth factors?
When we're young. When we don't get cancer.
Why don't we get cancer? Right. Bingo. So my statement is, IGF-1 is corollary, not causative. It's like, look, you got gasoline in your car. It stays in the tank. It goes to the engine. It fires the spark plugs. But if you have a really bad leak and you happen to have a pack of matches and you happen to strike that match and throw it, sure, you're going to blow the car up. That doesn't mean that you have to take gasoline out of the car.
No, that's exactly right. So, and you made the argument perfectly once with your analogy of a fire truck. If you take that argument, then fire trucks cause fires.
Right.
Yeah.
Right, exactly. All right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, we're going to play some of these clips, and we are not bashing Dr. Cordain, because I have the utmost respect for the guy. He's much more intelligent than I. But I just want to shine a light on some of the statements and see if there's any possibility that maybe in an effort to get his message across, which I believe his message is valid when it comes to pasteurized milk, personally. To get his message across, he's kind of thrown the baby out with the bathwater. We're talking today with Dr. Matt Andry. If you want to learn more about Matt, you can go to MD Weight Works, and that's MD Weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, Works is WORX.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Your shaker bottle is the most important tool in meal planning. The convenience in being able to take a ready-to-drink meal on the road is a necessity. Too often, our shaker bottle backfires on us, making what should be a convenience a disaster. Shaker Pro is the only shaker bottle in the world with a separate chamber to keep your protein powder dry until you're ready to mix it. Shaker Pro's patented design ensures that all of your powders will blend completely. Shaker Pro is BPA-free. Go to 4sportlife.com today. That's the number 4, sportlife.com. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead. Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today. Nowhere is performance enhancement more important than in the bedroom. That's why I use VIP from Geared Up Nutrition. VIP is a blend of herbal and botanical agents that maximize pleasure and performance. And it works for women too. In fact, VIP is so good you'll swear it's pharmaceutical. But it's not. And best of all, you only need one capsule about an hour before you're about to get passionate, and VIP works for up to 3 days. You can get VIP by going to veryintensepleasure.com. Try it once, and you'll buy it again and again. VeryIntensePleasure.com.
That's the sound of 37 dumbbells. That's a lot of weight and a lot of wasted space when you can get the same thing done with just one set of power blocks. The new, quieter Urethane Series Power Blocks with FlexPen technology are the heaviest and easiest to use quick change dumbbells on the market. Starting at just $149 a pair, Power Blocks can grow as your strength grows, all the way up to 130 pounds per dumbbell. Imagine a whole rack of dumbbells in the space of just one pair with Power Blocks. Go to powerblock.com today or call 800-651-1937. Power Block, the world's best dumbbell.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscle's N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, Dr. Matt Andry. Later in the show, Stephen Guinette will be on talking about the linkage between reward and obesity. Okay, this first clip I'm going to play is actually the longest of all the clips. It's actually a minute and 27 seconds, but it really does set up the whole discussion. Okay, Matt?
Mm-hmm.
So let's just start with this here. Hold on. Yeah. Unfortunately, the only area that you and I always disagree on is I'm a huge proponent of raw unpasteurized milk. And that's the one area that I deviate.
Well, let me give you some new information that's coming out in my book. I've got a whole chapter on it. And in the United States, the way we make milk that we feed the masses is by keeping our cows pregnant for their entire life.
Right.
So that way, they can produce milk 350 days out of the year. So what happens is we artificially inseminate cows while they are nursing their first calf. And so we keep them pregnant for, as I mentioned, for most of the year. Well, that's great because now they produce more milk. But the problem is when you keep them pregnant like that, it elevates estrogen in their bloodstream. And there's a variety of different estrogens that are increased. One of which is called estrone. And estrone is the female estrogen that we put in birth control pills. So it has high oral bioavailability, meaning if you put estrone in your mouth, which is what you're getting from raw milk, you are increasing the estrogen content of your bloodstream. If you're a man, if you eat estrogen, it increases the risk for prostate cancer and colon cancer. If you're a woman, it increases the lifelong risk of breast cancer.
Okay. Now, I kind of addressed this in a previous show. I asked my farmer if he used any type of hormones to keep the cows giving milk. And he quite logically said to me, Matt, no. He says, we calf a cow once a year. Meaning that they breed it and have it give birth.
You dry them out, man.
Yeah, he said if you don't stop milking, they will continue to give milk. He says, in fact, he said around the eighth month, we have to dry them out and get them ready to breed again.
Yep. That's what we do.
And Matt, you know what I thought about? And I feel bad because I feel like Dr. Cordain has got, I think he's confusing two things. Mm-hmm. I think.
All I heard in that clip, Carl, was an argument for raw milk.
Yeah, exactly. If you're right, cows that are raised like cows, exactly.
Yeah.
I think he's confusing something. Commercial cows, they don't even let them give birth.
No.
They give them the hormones to make them think, their bodies think they've given birth so that they can milk them.
Well, and actually, there's really no evidence that estrogen causes prostate cancer. For one thing, you need some estrogen, even if you're a guy. I'll contend that we do a whole lot of things in our society that make it too high. But the one study that people base their claims on is one done in rats, wasn't even done in people, where estrogen levels were correlated with prostate cancer. And actually, the Women's Health Initiative study just came out, and women on Premarin had a 25% decrease in breast cancer at the end of 7 years. Not increased.
Really? Have they released that information?
Yeah, they have. It's in JAMA.
But you don't hear the media is not jumping on that.
No. I got a good chance to talk to Esquire magazine a couple weeks ago, talking to their writers, and I was like, you guys, you're missing the boat here. Here's a huge article, huge information. Where is it? Where's somebody who wants to say the good news?
Right. You hit it right on the head. Nobody wants to talk about the good news. So in essence, this is not true. Pastured cows that calf once a year, they will give milk as long as you keep milking them. And if you don't believe that, ask any woman who has breastfed a baby. My ex-wife breastfed our first child for 6 months, our second child for 9 months, and our third child for 1 year. She didn't just stop giving milk.
No.
All of a sudden, she didn't stop giving milk until she decided to stop breastfeeding, and then slowly she dried up.
Where do you think the concept of a wet nurse came from? Porpoises, wet nurse.
Yeah, yeah.
I just saw someone down in Charleston this last week on vacation. It was great, but I was like, wow, that's really interesting. But to his point, yeah, the way we treat cows and what we get from them, if you're buying milk off the shelf, you're not buying food. You're buying a screwed up substance is as far from real milk as you can possibly get.
I actually call it roadkill because it's pasteurized, because it's a living food, and then they kill it and then they put it up on the shelf. Let's listen to just a couple. These are a couple short clips that kind of punctuate his opinion on this. Hold on a second. Yeah.
No human ever ate or consumed dairy products until very, very recent times. 65% of the planet does not have the enzyme required to break down the sugar in milk. So all the biological evidence tells us we don't need to have dairy products.
What's your opinion of that? Is this true of I didn't want to let that one go yet. What's your opinion of that fact that this is relatively new for us, milk?
Well, I'm glad that one got brought up, because of all the debate about this, and I love the debate because it makes me re-question some things that I held, and I say, is this true? Do I really think this? So forth.
Right.
I love it. But I am sick and tired of the argument that we're the only animal that eats another animal's milk. For one, it's not true. Look at the oxen.
There's something called a milk rat.
Well, there's a bird that feeds on the milk of impalas in Africa. Anyone who's had a farm, what do cats do when you drop any milk anywhere?
Yeah, they look it up. Right.
Go nuts on it. It's not true.
There's actually a breed of rat called a milk rat that usually inhabits, environments where there's a lot of animal husbandry and milking going on, and they drink nothing but milk.
If someone wanted to make that argument, they would say, well, it's still after we, domesticated animals. And nobody really knows when that happened. Best evidence is about 10,000 years ago. However, there's evidence that we domesticated goats long before that.
Right.
10,000 years compared to several million is not very much. However, there's no consensus on how many generations it takes to be able to. I mean, it only takes one generation to form a new mutation. That's it. And if you got enough selection pressure, like if you're in Western Europe and everybody's starving 10,000 years ago, and you're one of the 35% who do have lactase, man, you got a huge advantage.
I was just going to say that. Right. So I produce lactase, so I'm really superior to somebody who doesn't produce lactase.
You got a big advantage.
And here's the other thing. Why do I produce lactase if there wasn't milk in my diet somewhere along the line? I mean, in my ancestors' diet somewhere along the line.
That's a good question, and you got human milk there. Anyway, those are all great questions, but there are plenty of people around the world who don't tolerate lactose. That's fine. Don't drink milk.
But Matt, isn't it true that raw milk has lactase in it? That's a lot of people who are lactose intolerant thrive on raw milk. Dr. Ron Schmidt told me that.
Well, and I contend that there's a whole lot of things we've called lactose intolerance. They don't have a thing to do with that. For people, there are clearly some that do. But again, back to the paleo diet. I don't know how you mix the paleo diet with the fact that there are a billion people living in China who eat nothing but grain. We're opportunistic creatures. I don't contend that that's the diet that I want or thinks right, but if you've had that generation after generation after generation, everybody that couldn't live in that environment died.
Right. 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 Here, let's listen to this one real quick. Let's see what this is, because then there's a couple really good ones here. Now, is this true of pastured dairy cows that are organic pasture dairy cows that are producing raw milk as far as keeping them pregnant?
Just think about it. When does a mammal produce milk? A mammal only produces milk shortly before the birth of the animal and then after suckling period ends. We know it's completely unnatural for mammals to produce milk throughout their life.
Come
up with this argument.
But they're not producing milk throughout their lifestyle. Their lifetime. That's where he gets it wrong. His impression is that, and again, he's looking at commercial cows, isn't he?
Exactly, and that's a great section to talk about. But one thing I very much want to say is that we're also the only animals that farm grain. We're also the only, and I don't hear anybody coming out and say, "Well, that means we should never eat grain." Although that's a fair argument.
I do.
Yeah, but we're the only animals that do a lot of things. That doesn't mean it's not a workable way to do it.
Right.
We're opportunistic creatures. We take whatever environment we've got and trying to perpetuate our genes. That's as far as it goes.
I agree. You know what? That's a great point. The whole art of animal husbandry is contrary to the paleo. I mean, I'm sure Paleolithic human beings didn't round up animals and keep them, or maybe they did.
It's Neolithic. We followed herds of animals for tens of thousands of years.
Right.
We know that a pregnant animal is much greater risk of being preyed upon than one who isn't. Why? Because they're slower. They're carrying the parasite around in them. Fewer defensive. So you're telling me we didn't eat the milk we found in predated animals? That's crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, we ate the intestines.
right.
And if you want to believe in optimal foraging, which says you get the most energy you can out of your environment for the least expenditure, you better be ready to believe we were scavengers and carrion eaters.
Yeah.
That's a great way to do it. Bug eaters, termites, I'm sure we did.
Yeah, this is the last clip on this particular subject. Let's just play this, and then we're going to take a quick commercial break here. Let's just hear this one here.
Come up with this argument.
No,
this
I understand.
Argument was, I gave a talk back at Harvard on a conference produced by Walt Willett, and Walt Willett is not a very big proponent of milk drinking, and so he put together an international world-class conference. I gave the introduction on the evolutionary perspective, and I learned that at that conference. I learned this is how milk is being produced in the United States.
I buy my milk from a little Mennonite farmer. And he has about 36.
Well, the cow can't stay pregnant at all.
Well, I mean, but he has, but he does have a bull too. I mean, he could be producing.
Check it out carefully, but
see, and that he backed up, and he does say after that, he does say later in the show that being able to get your milk, raw unpasteurized milk from somebody who is breeding the cows, is an alternative, but that's not something that everybody on the planet can do.
Yeah.
He does say that. He does make that concession, the reality is. All right, here's what I want to do. I want to take a quick commercial break. When we come back, I want to talk about some of his allegations about the linkage between milk and insulin resistance and milk and cataracts. We're talking with Dr. Matt Andrew. You can learn more about Matt by going to his website, which is MD Weight Works. It's the letter M, the letter D, weight, W-E-I-G-H-T, works is spelled W-O-R-X.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. AnabolicMinds.com is the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your questions. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead. All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at orbitnutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit orbitnutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. orbitnutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at orbitnutrition.com. 6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to is 6-Oxo progesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
Protein is the building block of muscle. Protein-rich diets have been shown to not only be heart-healthy, but also burn body fat through the thermogenic effect of protein in the digestive process. But getting enough protein each day isn't easy. That's why I use True Protein from TrueProtein.com. TrueProtein.com has an incredible variety of flavors. My favorite is chocolate coconut. And you can even create your own custom blend. Mix whey, casein, and egg, or throw in a little beef isolate. And you can save 5% off the already low, low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Visit TrueProtein.com today and let them know Carl sent you.
Hey, this is Carl. You know, quite often you're forced to choose between price and quality when it comes to purchasing peptides for research purposes. But you don't have to do that any longer, because now there's opresource.net. At OP Resource, you will find the finest authentic peptides available anywhere at the best prices available anywhere. I only trust my research to opresource.net, and you should too. Check them out today. opresource.net. If you want to be superhuman, you can't eat junk. Finally, there's a protein bar that isn't just candy in disguise. Quest protein bars have 20 grams of protein, 4 to 5 grams of non-fiber carbs, and the only bars on the market with no sugar or sugar alcohols. I've never promoted a protein bar before, but these are delicious and unlike any other protein bars you've ever tried before. They're so good that Quest Nutrition is giving away 2 free bars to all my listeners, even free shipping. Go to superhumanradio.com right now and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to try them today.
Get stronger. Feel younger. It's Superhuman Radio.
Tried to make me go to rehab. I said no, no.
Playing this song in memory of Amy Winehouse. You know,
27 Club.
Yeah, the 27 Club. I was just going to say that. I wonder if many people know what that is.
Yeah, I don't know. All are great rock stars who died at age 27.
Started out with Jimi Hendrix. He was the first one. Janis Joplin was second.
John Paul Jones.
What about the guy from The Doors? Was he in the 27 Club?
Yes, he was.
Jim Morrison?
Yep.
Yeah. All died at the age of 27 due to drug overdoses.
Yeah, Lane Staley, Alice in Chains, my personal favorite.
Yeah, right.
Great guy.
Yeah. Poor Amy Winehouse, tortured soul. I really feel bad about her. You know, you just can't help but feel bad for these people whose souls are so tortured that they just they burn out. They just spiral out.
Just looking to self-destruct, man. Yeah. It's a rough way to live.
All right, let's get back to this subject. Let's play this next. These are two clips back-to-back I'm going to play because they roll into each other, and then I want to comment on them. Here they are.
That's all, Carl. Here's another one, too, that your readers need to be aware of. Is anybody that drinks milk is going to become insulin resistant, okay? And so we know that. We have a very powerful randomized controlled trial out of Germany showing that if you took a dozen kids and you put them on a high milk diet for a week, and we use the gold standard for measuring insulin sensitivity, they all become insulin resistant after a week of milk drinking. You replace the milk with meat, and the insulin levels become normal.
Now, Matt, that sounds astonishingly incorrect to me. I mean, I know that there may be a study out there, but I just can't believe that kids become insulin resistant from drinking milk for 1 week.
Well, a couple thoughts about that, Carl. One is, I don't know if you saw, the CDC released a paper about 3 months ago that said 100% of Americans have the potential to be insulin resistant in the right environment. Well, of course they do. You know, insulin is meant to be within a certain range, like any hormone in the body. Too bad, too little is bad, too much is bad. And I guarantee you that study wasn't done with raw milk. It wasn't probably done with whole milk. The reason they're insulin resistant, it's more simple than that. They got hyperinsulinemic, high levels of insulin. And it's absolutely true. You drink skim milk, even 2%, you're going to have a huge insulin spike. You keep having insulin spike after insulin spike, your receptors shut down.
The fat is critical for gastric emptying.
The fat is absolutely critical. You need to slow the gastric emptying. I treat people all day long for this, and one of the things we do if they drink dairy is if they can't get or won't get raw milk, I make sure they get whole instead of skim, and they look at me like I got 3 heads. Are you crazy? You don't go raw milk or go whole milk to lose weight, and works all day long.
Well, you know, Dr. Ron Schmidt, who wrote the definitive book on this, which is The Untold Story of Milk, said he cures people with type 2 diabetes by putting them on nothing but a milk diet, a raw unpasteurized milk, but they drink milk for every meal, and he reverses diabetes. And he was the one who told me, and I, you know, I doubted him back then about this, but due to some information that Dr. Andrew, who's been on my show regularly, posted once in, on his blog, Schmidt said that raw milk has insulin in it and has a transporter enzyme that gets it through the gut.
That's how we treated diabetes. That's all we had to treat diabetes at the turn of the
century. What he said. He said before insulin was discovered, the only way for somebody who had true type 1 diabetes to stay alive was to drink milk.
That's absolute truth. You know, and there's a lot of correlations with that study. I mean, I do the same thing. We've reversed diabetes in, you know, hundreds of people. We do that with via a very low-cal diet with enough protein in it.
Right.
No matter what source you use, you're not going to be able to find diabetes. But I think milk is an okay source to do that with, or can be. We make this, you know, too hard. I love talking about the evolutionary components of this stuff because that's my training. I started out in ecology, and to me, evolution answers all questions except origins. What people need to remember is that if you're people talking about and using evolutionary studies, all evolution cares about is getting those genes in the next generation.
Right.
You live long enough to be 16, 15, whatever, and you can pass them on, the rest is gravy, baby.
Right.
And that has nothing to do with what is optimal, has nothing to do with what is ideal. It has to do with what worked enough.
But I mean, again, coming back to this study that he points to, and I have to find the study, and shame on me for not having it handy for this interview. I drank milk as a child, gobs and gobs of milk. My father used to complain. He'd say, "Carl, we're going to have to get a cow." This is back when milk was sold in quarts. I was going through 3-4 quarts a day. And I don't think I was insulin resistant. I got to be honest with you.
Well, you know, and who know if your pancreas made enough insulin, like everybody who's pre-diabetic does, you'd never know it. And you get to where you're drinking less, you're working out enough, you know, you got enough other things in the diet. It's not necessarily going to matter, but it doesn't mean anything to me. The fact that you put people on this and they get insulin resistant. Well, try raw whole milk, see what happens.
Also, anabolic steroids in high doses make you insulin resistant.
Absolutely.
And that Dr. Scott Connolly has taught me to start looking at insulin resistance differently. There's situational insulin resistance that is actually
functional.
Beneficial.
Yep, absolutely true. I mean, you go through a cycle of that kind of every day. Your receptors are always adjusting. That's why they do it, to be able to adjust and adapt to situations. You do the same thing with glucagon. You know, fortunately, we're finally starting to understand how important glucagon is. It's just as important as insulin in the management of our glucose metabolism.
Right, right. Let's play this last snippet. It's a 33-second one, and this one is another one that is confounding to me, but let's listen to it.
Another point on the milk thing is if you don't want to develop senile cataracts at an early age, don't drink milk. We know that we can induce cataracts in a variety of animal models simply by giving them galactose. No animal on the planet ever eats galactose beyond weaning. If you drink milk, that's half the sugar in milk. Lactose is made up of galactose and glucose. And galactose immediately causes, we can produce cataracts in young, healthy animals just by giving them a high galactose diet.
Okay. Any opinions on that one?
I've never seen that clinically once. So. You know, I don't have much of an opinion on that. A lot of things cause cataracts, not the least of which is the loss of our ozone layer and a lot of gamma radiation.
Right.
That's a far bigger factor to me. That's what I mean. It gets frustrating because what is clear, if you got that many reasons milk is bad, what it means is that you believe that at your fundamental core. And so you're going to color every piece of information you get with that belief.
Well,
so
Matt, let's go back to what I just said. I wasn't joking when I said I drank a gallon of milk a day as a kid.
I know you weren't.
I would have had cataracts by now, wouldn't I?
Well, if that was true, absolutely.
I drank 5 gallons of milk a week, raw unpasteurized milk, for years.
Yeah.
I only drink 2 or 3 now, but I've also drank 3 quarts of cream a week, and I don't have cataracts at all.
Perhaps with the exception of galactose, but every other argument you heard him make there, frankly, it only applies to the junk that's on this, the,
yeah.
the shelves, and we haven't even talked about A1, A2, and we haven't even talked about pasture-fed cattle. So, geez.
You know what? And that's when I listen to these, I think to myself, he does make an argument for raw, unpasteurized milk from pasture-fed cows with no hormones. Because that is the argument. When you think about it, no hormones keeping them making milk. They calf once a year. They're eating grass. They have a higher CLA production in their milk, which is going to ward off any potential cancer-causing effects now. I mean, it's just everything, you know, speaks to raw, unpasteurized milk here.
But, Carl, for him to be positive on that when he's got all the other reasons to be negative is a spurious argument.
Well, that's, you know, what I'm saying, yeah.
It doesn't make sense. The point is that, you know, again, here's the bottom line, in my opinion. In the end, at the end of the day, to heck with what Dr. Cordain says, to heck with what you say, to heck with what I say. You try it. You got a wisdom inside you that allows you to guide what should be done for your health. If you take it, you got milk in it, you can tell your body is functioning well, it's probably right.
Right, right. You know, and that's a good point. I actually did an entire show with Randy Roach, good friend of mine. He's a historian who studies the nutritional origins of physical culture. And he studied, I mean, you name them, all, you know, Pottinger and Price and the guy who lived with the Inuits. I mean, Randy, he can spout every bit of information about what they learned and so on. And I did a show with him 2 years ago under the premise that we have lost our instincts as human beings. We look to books to teach us how to raise our children. We look to books to teach us how to eat. We look to books to teach us how to keep our homes. We look to other people for all the answers. We have lost our instincts and our intuitions. And we look to, and that's why people who publish books try to find a single silver bullet that all milk is bad. This is, you know, because they want to be able to appeal to the masses, and then people are so in dire need of direction in every area of their life, they gobble these books up. Look at China study. Look at the China study. It's got people avoiding protein.
Exactly. You know, I got a very dear patient. He's an anthropology teacher, you know, here in Bloomington. And I was talking to him because I was kind of frankly confounded about some of the paleo diet stuff. And I'm like, well, what did we eat early and so forth? And he was joking with me. He said, you know, I missed my last conference, but the joke that we anthropologists make is, well, did anybody come up with a universal this year? And the answer was always, well, so-and-so thought they did, but we shot that down too. There are no universals. There just aren't. The only universal I know of is your own internal wisdom. And and I got a good reason for that, because you're the only one that lives with the consequences.
That's
period.
A good one. I like that. Hey, Matt, we have to take a quick commercial break. I want to change up the discussion when we come back on a note for what you were just talking about. So you're listening to Superhuman Radio. We're talking with Dr. Matt Andree. Matt actually has his own radio show that I'll be on later this week, hopefully.
Yeah.
And you can learn more about Dr. Matt Andree by going to his website, which is MDWorks, MDWEIGHTWORX.com. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
I've never felt a pump from taking a supplement. That's until I tried creatine nitrate from APS Nutrition. I expected to feel nothing, just like the NO supplements I had taken before. But this stuff really does work. Even taking below the recommended dose, I could feel the sensation of tighter muscles under the swelling effect of the pump. And the pump lasts for a few hours. It worked for me, and I was a skeptic. Check out creatine nitrate by visiting APSNutrition.com today. Try it, and you'll be a believer too.
Sissies may want to stop listening now. Super DMZ is the most powerful legal compound available on the market today, bar none. Super DMZ will give you lean muscle and strength gains at comparable rates to the anabolic steroid Dianabol with none of the water retention or bloat. Super DMZ contains Superdrol dimethazine, not to be confused with other Superdrol knockoffs. Get Super DMZ while supplies last at ironmaglabs.com. Don't wait too long, because Super DMZ is sure to be added to the government ban list. Go to ironmaglabs.com today.
If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your miracle noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
Mike Mahler is one of the most sought-after teachers in the world of kettlebell training. Whether your goal is greater strength, speed, mental toughness, or fat loss, you'll come away with newfound knowledge. His seminars play to sold-out crowds. Now you can attend one of the most exciting, life-changing strength and conditioning seminars in the world. Seminars are scheduled for Denver, Tacoma, Washington, Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, Hawaii, and Miami. These will not be repeat engagements, so don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Go to MikeMahler.com today and book your seat. That's Mike, M-A-H-L-E-R.com. Space is very limited.
Muscle and joint pain can slow your progress to a screeching halt. That's why I use Kodiak Chiropractic Cream. Kodiak Cream won't hinder muscle growth while reducing pain and inflammation because Kodiak Cream uses only non-pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory agents proven to halt inflammation and relieve pain instantly. Kodiak Cream is great if you suffer from fibromyalgia or osteoarthritis as well. Get your Kodiak Cream today by clicking the banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Kodiak Cream. It's the only thing I use to manage pain, and you should too.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
Jumping higher, left and more. It's Superhuman Radio.
Take it back.
Remember to check Mike Mahler's website constantly. He's constantly adding cities. His tour is coming up. He's going to be every place you could imagine this year. Go to MikeMahler.com. He could be attending a seminar at a city close to you. You could get in on it. It's a wonderful opportunity. Guy inspires a lot of people, man. My guest this hour is Matt Andre. Later in the show, Stephen Guinette. Matt, you teach at the Indiana University School of Medicine, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm.
How do you temper what you know to be true with the curriculum?
Well, that's a great question, man. Honestly, it's tough. I've had my feet in a lot of camps because I really try to talk to a lot of different groups, a lot of docs that believe a lot of different things.
Well, you're also a different doctor. You're open-minded. You don't feel like as though you have all the answers.
Again, I don't live with the consequences. People do. I'm happy to guide them, tell them things I've learned or think, see if it bounces off them or sticks. But, I try to pay some deference to the people. Most docs I know are really good people, but they're working in a system that just doesn't allow them the freedom or the opportunity to do what they think is best in their own mind to help people. They instead answer to insurance companies and their bosses and seeing 40 people a day. That's why I quit all that, and I don't take insurance, and
right.
I do straight cash. And they told me I'd go broke in 6 months, and 6 years I can't get money in for 2 months.
Right.
That's not the truth. But when I talk to the young people I love talking to because they've not been ruined yet.
Right.
But when I talk to my colleagues, I don't necessarily temper my statements, but the minute you offend someone – they shut you off.
Right. So you got it. Yeah, you got to be diplomatic, in other words.
I hate the word diplomatic for me. What I do is I try to make a connection with them to say, okay, we're looking for the same thing. Now that you get that, because people make decisions about people before they make decisions about ideas. Happens every time. And if you decide somebody's a good guy and probably knows what he's talking about, then you're going to follow him. You're going to consider more what he says. If you decide this guy's a quack and a moron, then it doesn't matter what you say. You could say the sky's blue and you're going to disagree with it. We'll talk about the things that we agree on. We'll say, now consider this. Maybe this is true. What do you do with this? What do you do with this question? Does it matter? And you soft sell them and give them respect. Show people respect. That's all they require. When you walk in and slap them in the face and tell them that everything they do is wrong and they're killing people, well, of course they dig their heels in.
Right.
But nobody goes anywhere if you do that.
Right. But what about your students? I mean, when you're talking to your students, obviously you cannot deviate from the accepted curriculum, even if you want to, right?
Oh, hell yes. I do it all all the time.
Okay.
Well, we make sure they know the things they need for the testing that they're required. But then every group to me is different. Every group of students I've had, they've got their own personality, their own wants, their own needs. I had two groups this year. The first group was the best I think I've had in 7 years. The last group, I was appalled because these poor guys got all the way up to where I'm teaching them, and no one had even taught them how to do a history and physical yet. And I was mad, frankly, not at them, but at our system.
Right.
And so we started from ground zero, man. I mean, this is how you talk to people. This is what's important, and this is why, you know, listen, this ain't about your feelings, because you got a lot of responsibility of what you do, and you got to know what you're doing. But they are open. You know, they do come in with usually a desire to help, and you got to have that if you're going in medicine these days.
I'm preparing to do a show on how to select a doctor.
Ah, one of my favorite topics.
Okay. And I actually have created a form that I want people to send to their physician, because I want to turn things around. Currently, the way people of my parents' generation and your parents' generation approach the doctors was the doctor is all-knowing.
Yep.
He is the closest thing to God on earth that we're going to find. And you never want to challenge him. You never want to doubt him. And you're lucky to even have him paying attention to you. And that's the way the AMA wanted things to be and has created it. But we're smarter today.
Yep, that's right.
Okay.
And then, you know, people get frustrated with me with how often I say the words, "I don't know." Because I say it all day long. I mean,
right.
People ask good questions, and I don't have answers. But I say, you know, let's not worry about the answers. Let's just ask better questions.
Right. Now, let me ask you this question. If I were screening you as a potential candidate to be my physician, and I asked you this question, would you answer it? This is what I want to know. Or would a doctor say, because I know he has the right to say, I don't want to answer that. But if I contact you and says, in the list of questions I'm asking you, one of the things I want to know is, now tell me, Dr. Andrew, what medications are you on? Would you answer that question?
No, I would not.
Because it's personal, you're saying, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't know that you don't work for some insurance company that's going to raise my rates next year or whatever. And there's darn few reasons. However, what I will say is this. I've shared with many patients on an individual basis something that I have taken or needed,
right?
Or what my experience was,
right?
And it could give a comfort level.
Right. Okay. The reason I say this is this. We choose doctors to be the shepherds of our health, to help us, because they have access to testing and interpretation and so on.
Agents that they can't get without them.
Right. And yep. So I want a doctor who is like me. I want a doctor who believes that the answer is not in a pharmaceutical drug.
Yep.
The answer is in my body. I have
yep.
to make commitments to get my body to do what I want it to do. And so I would not want to go to a doctor, Matt, who says to me, well, I'm on a blood pressure med, I'm on a lipid lowering drug, I'm on this, I'm that. I'm like, oh my God, you're not the guy I want.
You know, there are a lot of, I want to know if that doctor treats his family the same way he does his patients. I'm sick and tired of going to conferences and hearing people say, oh yeah, TSH of 4.5 is fine. It's within the normal range. And yet if it's their mom, they're pushing it down to 1.5.
Right.
You know, I'm tired of that. It's either the right thing to do or it isn't.
Right.
Period.
Right. That's a really, really good point. Let me ask you another question, Matt. You and I have never met face to face, but I have to believe that you're in pretty decent shape. Okay?
I'm in decent shape. I could be better. I don't sleep enough sometimes because
well,
I get my brain interested.
Well, and you've got I'm sure you have a heavy caseload as well that you can't just put off till tomorrow quite often. But would you go see a physician who was morbidly obese?
Potentially, yes, because I look beyond that. It depends on what the question is I want answered, and that's the important thing. You go with the questions that you want answered. You don't go there to be told what you need to do for your health. That is not that person's responsibility. That's yours.
So, in other words,
he's never abrogate your responsibilities.
Yeah, he's no more and no less than a data portal for you at that point in time.
Absolutely. Now, sometimes what a doctor can be, and sometimes their most important function by far, is to help you consider things that you couldn't otherwise. Not even in terms of options, in terms of a treatment, but just a perspective. You know, you don't have to treat everything if it's not that bad. You know, we we forget all the time. If someone is a high risk of dying within 5 years, they don't need to be on a cholesterol medicine. Okay?
Right.
You know, those perspectives get lost.
An 87-year-old person should not be prescribed for the very first time a lipid-lowering drug. I just had this argument with the doctor who's treating my mother. She's 87 years old. She's never been on a cholesterol med before in her life. They just put her on one. I said, what is the collateral effect of this? It's going to help her live what? How many more years? Forget about it. It's not going to lengthen it's not going to lengthen her life. And if anything, it could impair the quality of her life.
Well, and we've been shown it this year in spades, okay? And the quality of the agents, the medicines we have right now, is abhorrent. If you're getting generic meds, you better check them out. They do not work as well. The quality control on them is ridiculous. 10% are counterfeit.
So where the hell is the FDA in that? That's right. They're busy chasing the supplement companies and Diamond Walnuts, because Diamond Walnuts wanted to say that walnuts were heart healthy. They're busy doing that.
Exactly. I get. You know, I would love to talk to some folks from there one day to find out, you know, hey, can we turn you all around to make it an agency that works for us, not against us?
you think it's possible? I mean, do you think it's possible?
No, not necessarily.
I'll tell you how it would be possible.
Yeah.
I'll tell you right now. They get a lot of money from the pharmaceutical companies.
Yep.
And okay, you want to know what? If every person put $1 a year into an account, that every person on this in the United States, that's $300 million, and we told the FDA, you now work for us. We'll give you this $300 million every single year to work for us. You'll see things change.
Yep, and we're not gonna have much pharmaceutical companies before long. I mean, they've politicized them so badly that they've eliminated their ability to do business. So R&D is gonna go away. We're not gonna have new drugs for stuff because it's too restrictive. You got to have $1.5 billion to get a drug through there now.
Right. And we got to get rid of the FDA. Really, really do. Really, really do. Something has to change at the FDA level. It is not, you said it, it's not working for us any longer.
Nope.
Just not.
That's the truth.
Hey, Matt, we've come to the end of the interview. I want to thank you so much for taking time to come on and talk about this. And again, we're both big fans of Dr. Cordain's. I don't want anyone out there to
absolutely
think that we're not. I just think that in his goal to, come up with a universal statement, he may have forgotten about this small little niche, which is the dairy farmers who treat their cows like cows are supposed to be treated. They calf them once a year. They milk them for 6 months, 7 months, and then they start again.
I strongly contend that if you can tolerate milk and you get your milk from a grass-fed, non-hormone antibiotic-using farm, raw, A2 cows, you've got a pretty darn good food substance.
There you go. I'm with you. All right, Matt, we'll have you back on the show pretty soon, okay?
Thank you, brother.
All right, thank you. All right, so stay tuned. When we come back, we're going to have Stephen Guinette on, and we're going to be talking about the limited reward diet and its linkage to obesity. We'll be right back. There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in Can-See eye drops. I've been using Can-See for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing. My near vision has improved, and I can read small print from 8 inches. My overall vision is clearer, and the glare from oncoming headlights doesn't bother me any longer. Just 1 to 2 drops a day, and the results are visible. You can find Can-See eye drops at wisechoicemedicine.net or call 800-861-4936. That's 800-861-4936. wisechoicemedicine.net. Can-See eye drops. The name says it all.
Branched chain amino acids have been shown to be as powerful as weak anabolic steroids in building muscle and burning fat. BCAAs will increase mitochondria biogenesis and size. The 3 amino acids in BCAAs pass right from the lining of the stomach directly into the bloodstream and begin flipping the switches for muscle growth immediately. The best BCAAs are at trueprotein.com. Unlike others, they mix instantly in water, and you can save 5% off the already low price when you use the coupon code SHRADIO. Go to TrueProtein.com and get your BCAAs.
Age Force introduces the first ever nitric oxide booster plus advanced post-workout recovery formula in a two-stage transdermal patch. Stage 1 releases its nitric oxide boosting formula directly into the bloodstream the minute you apply it, and continues to deliver a powerful nitric oxide boost during your workout. Stage 2 is delayed time release, so the post-recovery formula starts after your workout. Go to ageforce.com and check out the new pre- and post-workout patch and get 50% off any order with the promo code SHROX. Save 50% when you use coupon code SHROX.
Mike Mahler is one of the most sought-after teachers in the world of kettlebell training. Whether your goal is greater strength, speed, mental toughness, or fat loss, you'll come away with newfound knowledge. His seminars play to sold-out crowds. Now you can attend one of the most exciting, life-changing strength and conditioning seminars in the world. Seminars are scheduled for Denver, Tacoma, Washington, Washington, D.C., Las Vegas, Hawaii, and Miami. These will not be repeat engagements, so don't miss this once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. Go to MikeMahler.com today and book your seat. That's Mike, M-A-H-L-E-R.com. Space is very limited.
If you're like me, you avoid the insulin spike from eating pasta, but not anymore. Miracle Noodle is the world's first no-calorie, no-carbohydrate noodle. You heard me right. Now you can enjoy pasta dishes and stay on your low-carb diet. They have fettuccine, linguine, rigatoni, and more. Even angel hair pasta is now a no-calorie, no-carb food. And Miracle Noodle tastes great. So go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Miracle Noodle banner ad to learn more about how you can start enjoying pasta again, even when you're dieting. Find your Miracle Noodle at superhumanradio.com today.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at PrimordialPerformance.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour, I've been mispronouncing his name, by the way, I apologize, is Stefan Guyane. And he has a fantastic blog over at wholehealthsource.org. And I became intrigued with a series that he's done, and that's what we're going to be talking about today with him. And this is the linkage between reward, food as a reward, and obesity. How are you doing, Stefan?
Good. How are you, Carl?
Wonderful, wonderful. You know, we know that food is a reward, right? When we've done something well, or, you know, we celebrate, we have a big dinner, and we stuff ourselves. And so this is obviously something that is deeply rooted in our makeup. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we are essentially designed to seek out things that promote our own survival. We're, you know, evolutionarily designed to seek out things that promote our own survival. So things like physical comfort in terms of temperature, sex, food, those things are very deeply hardwired into our brains. And we have a coordinated system of brain regions that essentially ensure that we, over time, learn how to acquire the things that are good for our survival. Or at least it's designed to allow us to learn how to acquire things that are good for our survival in a natural environment, an environment that we evolved to occupy.
Okay. Now, Ori Hofmeckler was the first person to kind of start discussing this linkage between hunger, satiety, and obesity. Explain what reduced reward dieting is, first of all.
Well, to really understand the concept, I think we need to take a step back and, first of all, just talk about how body fatness is regulated. So, body fatness is, it's been known since about the 1950s, since people first started doing lesion studies in rodents, that we have areas of our brain that actually control body fatness. And over the course of the next few decades, we discovered that there's basically this negative feedback loop that occurs between fat tissue and a part of the brain called the hypothalamus that regulates body fatness, and that's done by this hormone leptin.
Right.
And so basically what that tells us is that body fatness is not just a passive result of conscious food intake and exercise behaviors. It's actually actively regulated by the body, and I think that's a really important concept.
Right, and we even see this in hibernating animals that don't change their energy intake, but yet they store everything they eat as fat.
Yeah, that is an excellent point, because you can take a squirrel, for example, that's a seasonal hibernator, and you can make sure to restrict it to the exact same amount of food that it's eating during the lean time during the summer. And just like you said, it will gain fat in the winter without eating more calories, because it has a metabolic adaptation to burn fewer calories and store the excess as fat mass.
Right.
So so we have this system that controls body fatness. And the question is, if we have this system that controls body fatness, how can obesity occur? If we have this system, that's a negative feedback. And
right.
Basically what we think is that there's a loss of sensitivity to this hormone leptin that basically means that for each unit fat mass, the brain is hearing less signal. And so it's hearing less leptin signal. And so it takes more leptin for the brain to think that you're at the appropriate amount of fat mass.
I've never really understood. I mean, I've heard the word, the hormone leptin, discussed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
I've never understood, is leptin manufactured in fat cells?
Correct. Yeah, leptin is manufactured in fat cells, and the amount of circulating leptin is proportional to the amount of fat that you carry.
Sure. That makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Right, exactly. And leptin goes to the brain and promotes promotes a whole system that essentially is designed to burn body fat. So decreases hunger, increases energy expenditure, decreases the accumulation of fat and fat tissue. And so if you eat too much and you gain some fat, that negative feedback system will essentially burn off the extra fat to get you back to where you were. And conversely, if you don't eat enough, that system will make you hungrier and make you more energy efficient so that you'll store fat until you get back to your original level. So basically, except at extreme cases where you're deliberately overfeeding or deliberately underfeeding, you're going to stay at a relatively stable weight. And the question is, if that's true, then how do we get obesity? And we believe that it's resistance to this negative feedback.
Sure, makes perfect sense. The body, the brain, the hypothalamus is saying, I don't have an adequate amount of leptin. I need more fat. If the leptin is produced in fat cells, then basically the leptin is a messenger saying, you know, here's how much fat we have right now. And obviously it's the body's job to have a certain amount of fat because, to guard against famine and illness and so on.
Exactly. And so when you have someone who is obese or overweight, what we know is that that person's body thinks that that is the weight that they should be at. And so that's why it's very difficult to lose body fat, because essentially when an obese person loses 10% of their fat mass, their body thinks that they're starving, even though they have an extraordinary amount of fat still on their body. That's the difficulty with losing fat, is you run into this problem of the system that's designed to protect an appropriate amount of fat mass, but it is kind of messed up about what the appropriate amount actually is.
Stefan, what is the relationship between leptin and ghrelin?
Well, ghrelin is another one of these body fat feedback hormones, we believe. So ghrelin is a bit more complex. Ghrelin is both a short and a long-term acting signal. So short-term regulation of food intake, like meal-to-meal basis, is regulated more in the brainstem, and that's basically satiety and satiation signals that are coming from the gastrointestinal tract in response to food. So you eat food, basically the way it works with ghrelin, most satiety peptides or satiety factors increase when you eat food, and that tells the brain you're full, stop eating food.
Right.
But ghrelin is the reverse.
Right.
Ghrelin, the hungrier you are, the more ghrelin you have, and when you eat, it goes down. So it's regulated in a reciprocal manner, but it kind of sends the same type of signal
right
to the brain. And so ghrelin is both a short-term acting satiety and satiation factor, and it's also a long-term acting factor. So, for example, if you infuse ghrelin into the brain, you can cause animals to gain body fat over time. They'll eat more, and they'll gain body fat. So that's not true with most of those short-acting satiety and satiation peptides, where they have a short-term effect, but they won't have a long-term effect. And the reason for that, we believe, is that ghrelin is actually acting in the hypothalamus, just like leptin does. So There's a few of these hormones, leptin, insulin, ghrelin, and amylin, that act in the hypothalamus and that we believe directly influence this regulation of body fatness itself.
We're about a minute away from our first break, and I want to hold the discussion just a little bit longer off about reduced reward and its effects on obesity. I want to ask you your opinion of something else. Many people within the anti-aging community now use peptides like GHRP2 and GHRP6, which are derivatives of ghrelin, correct?
I don't know anything about that.
Okay. All right. Well, then we'll skip that.
Okay.
Let's do this. Let's go ahead and take our break now. When we come back, I want to talk about this concept about reduced reward and its linkage to obesity. We're talking today with Stefan Guyanne. You can learn more about him by going to his fantastic blog, wholehealthsource.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thousands of Superhuman Radio listeners already know how well GLC 2000 works at repairing joints and cartilage, and it's the best price on the market, milligram for milligram. Now GLC Direct is offering a special that my listeners can take advantage of. Buy one, get one free of any GLC 2000 product. That's right, buy one of your favorite GLC 2000 products and get one free. Capsules or raw powder. Just mention Superhuman Radio and buy one, get one free today. Call 866-452-3473 or click the GLC banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Offer limited to one per household.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The Triazole formula is built on a potent all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the Triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of Triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Introducing AgeForce Testo 100, the first testosterone booster in a transdermal time-release patch. Produced in FDA-certified labs, Testo 100 bypasses digestion and delivers its testosterone-boosting formula directly into the bloodstream. That's a huge advantage over oral testosterone supplements. Testo 100 patches raise testosterone levels throughout the day to elevate libido, energy, and maximize muscle-building, fat-burning effects without suppressing normal testosterone production. For a limited time, Superhuman Radio listeners can save 50% off Testo 100 by going to ageforce.com and using the coupon code SHR4. Don't wait. Go to AGEFORCE.com and use code SHR4 and save 50% now.
The Isolator will change the way you work out forever. We've all imagined how it would be if there was an apparatus that would eliminate the hands, forearms, biceps, and triceps from training chest, back, and shoulder muscles. Well, now you can with the isolator. The isolator does exactly what it says. It allows you to isolate muscles to get a better, more intense workout. And they're so versatile, they work with machines or free weights. You have to see the isolator to believe it. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the isolator fitness banner ad today. The isolator, the only way to train.
Testosterone is the king of anabolic hormones, and Test Charge is unlike any testosterone amplifier you have ever tried, because only Test Charge has taxadrol, a substance that grows in only one place in the world and is only found in Test Charge. Test Charge will jack your testosterone levels like illegal agents, but rest assured, there are no banned substances in Test Charge. Test Charge is the secret weapon used by IFBB legend Flex Wheeler. And now you can join the pro ranks. Go to AAEFX.com to learn more about where you can find Test Charge today.
Nowhere is performance enhancement more important than in the bedroom. That's why I use VIP from Geared Up Nutrition. VIP is a blend of herbal and botanical agents that maximize pleasure and performance, and it works for women too. In fact, VIP is so good you'll swear it's pharmaceutical, but it's not. And best of all, you only need one capsule about an hour before you're about to get passionate, and VIP works for up to 3 days. You can get VIP by going to veryintensepleasure.com. Try it once, and you'll buy it again and again. Veryintensepleasure.com.
Listen strong. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. Okay. So, explain the concept of reduced reward dieting. Are we simply talking about what it sounds like I'm going to eat food that doesn't necessarily stimulate a taste, overwhelmingly satisfying taste? Is that what we're talking about here?
Not quite. So there's two concepts. There's food reward and there's food, the hedonic value of food, I would say, which is basically the pleasure value of food. So, or you could refer to that as palatability. So,
okay.
Reward in the strict sense, in the psychology sense, reward is a process by which, something reinforces a behavior. So for example, if you eat a highly rewarding food, you will be more likely to eat that same food in the future. So it's, in the extreme sense, something that's extremely rewarding will be addictive. It's something that reinforces behavior to the point where you can't control your behaviors. But reward itself is not necessarily the same as addiction. There's perfectly normal, healthy levels of reward that we deal with everyday life. And then the palatability of a food, that's just a straightforward concept. That's how much do you like it. So, all right, so I'm going to take a little step back and talk a little bit about some of the early research that was done on food reward and palatability and body fatness.
Okay.
And so the question is basically this leptin system creates this sort of set point where your body fat is descended around this particular point. But we know in obesity and in overweight people, that set point is elevated. So their bodies are descending an elevated level of fat mass.
Right.
So the question is, how did that happen? And I think that there are a lot of factors that go into that, but an important one is food reward and palatability. So around 1965, there was this very interesting study that was done using obese people on a bland liquid diet. They basically had them suck this food through a straw for, one guy was up to 255 days. And what they did was they first took lean people, put them on this diet, they got nothing else, and they ate a totally normal amount of food and maintained their fat mass exactly. Then they put obese people on this food, and they reduced their calorie intake to a very, very low level. This is, by the way, spontaneous calorie intake. They have no way to measure how much they're getting. They're just sucking on the straw.
Right.
And they were eating like 250 to 500 calories a day with no hunger, and losing almost a pound a day of fat mass. One guy lost 200 pounds that way over the course of 255 days. So the next result that I found really informative was in 1976, this guy, Anthony Sclafani, who's done a lot of good research in food reward, was trying to create a diet to make rats obese, to study how obesity works.
Right.
And so at the time, they had all kinds of things they were trying to do. They were adding sugar to the diet. They were adding fat to the diet. They were, you know, messing with the macronutrients in every possible way, messing with the micronutrients. And, you know, they were able to get these kind of modest overweight phenotypes, but nothing was really gelling. And so what he did was he created this thing that's come to be known as the cafeteria diet. And all it is giving rats a variety of human junk food to eat. So it's like things like cakes and cookies and processed meats and sweetened condensed milk, just junk food, plain and simple.
Right.
And the rats got fatter than any other permutation of the diet that you could possibly use. And
wow.
So this diet has been studied. Yeah, they got incredibly
obese. Why doesn't, I mean, that's worth the price of admission right there. You know, it's like, why didn't anybody talk about this in the media today?
Yeah, and it's a really simple idea if you think about it. It's disarmingly simple, but it seems to be a very important idea. And so these rats got really fat. And this diet has been studied a lot over the years. And what they've found is that the rats are quite literally addicted to this junk food. When you create situations where they have to go through significant discomfort to get this food, they will do it even when less palatable food is readily available.
So right.
They'll endure extreme cold temperatures. They will endure foot shocks, which rats really don't like, to get this junk food when there's regular rat chow that's much healthier sitting right next to them in unlimited quantity.
So does it come down to the taste of the food and the reward in the brain that the taste stimulates?
Exactly. That's exactly it. So
oh, man.
The reward is a factor. It's not just the taste. It's also the texture and the presentation. It's how calorie dense it is, and that's all sense.
You know, and I can tell you something. I was morbidly obese at a point in my life. I mean, that's how this journey started for me. And I had a good friend in Las Vegas who was very, very obese. This is before I put on all my weight. I remember whenever he and I would be talking and there would be problems in his life, and then I'd say, you want to get a bite to eat? I remember how he would perk up. His eyes would light up. And I remember, well, I experienced that firsthand myself when I became fat, when I was over 300 pounds. And I remember how I could be having a terrible day, but just the thought of like a Wendy's hamburger and French fries and a Frosty, it would actually be almost euphoric, the sensation, the thought about it. And, you know, that's very similar to people who are addicted to drugs. With people who are addicted to drugs, the actual experience of getting the drugs, they already start becoming high when they're copping. You know what I mean? The anticipation of getting the drugs and then doing the drugs is secondary sometimes to actually going and getting the drugs. So there is clearly a huge, like a euphoric effect to food when it's this kind of food like you're talking about.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I don't want to say that obese people are literally addicted to food, because that's a very controversial statement that hasn't really been worked out yet. But I will say that there is a level of poor control over food eating behaviors that a lot of people have, including obese people, and it's always in response to these highly palatable, highly rewarding foods. And if you think about it, we live in a society where all the products are competing on a, you know, somewhat free market for consumer attention. And what reward is the process by which behaviors are reinforced, favoring the acquisition of the thing in question. So basically, these foods on the shelf are competing to be the most rewarding food that you're going to come back and buy.
Right.
So basically, the market guarantees that at any one time, those foods are going to be as rewarding as the manufacturers can possibly make them. And so we're basically surrounded by a food environment with extreme high rewarding foods that people really essentially lose control around, or at least don't have full control around. And also, those things, I believe, change our body fat control systems to favor a higher weight gain. Mm. So that brings me to the research of this guy, Michel Cabanac, who showed in the 1970s, around the same time that Anthony Sclafani came out with the cafeteria diet, he did an experiment where he gave people this bland liquid diet. It's kind of similar to that earlier experiment I was talking about. And they spontaneously ate fewer calories and lost weight. And then he had a separate group where he left them on their normal diet, normal palatable diet, but he restricted calories so they could only eat the same number of calories as the people drinking the bland food were eating.
But they were the foods of their choice, in other words, but they were just calorically similar. Okay.
Correct. And so they both lost the same amount of weight, except he had this interesting technique for being able to tell if those people were at their set point, at their body weight set point, the body fatness that their body prefers, or whether they were below that. And what he found was that actually the bland diet lowered their actual set point. It lowered where their body wanted to be, whereas the diet that was just restricted in calories, which is basically corresponds to, you know, the mainstream advice on how to lose weight, did not reduce the set point. So those people were provoking this compensatory response by their body that was essentially going to make their diet a failure in the long term, whereas the bland diet was not.
You know, when I underwent all of my weight loss, I remember saying to people, I have divorced myself from flavor, because I'm Italian. And so, you know, everything's about eating. It's like, you know, and the more food and the more savory, the better. And I remember relegating myself to, you know, broiled chicken breast, tuna out of the can. I mean, I was eating very, very, I mean, even in my family, no one would eat the way I was eating, but I had a desire to lose the weight and get healthy. And I said, consciously, I am divorcing myself from flavor. And you know, what I learned at that point in time too was the set point of my palate changed. Things like plain oatmeal were so satisfying to me, where in the past it would have had to have cream and berries and brown sugar and, you know, and whatever in order to be that satisfying. So your palate actually changes as well. We have to take a break. I want you to hang with this for a second, because when we come back, I want to ask you if there are certain flavors that lend themselves to this reward, or is it different for every person? We're talking with Stefan Guyanet about the rewards of food and their linkage to obesity. You can learn more about him by going to wholehealthsource.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. Party on, party people, let me hear some noise. DC's in the house, jump, rejoice. There's a party over here, a party over there. Wave your hands in the air, shake the dairy, yeah. These three words mean you're getting busy. Whoa, there it is. Age Force introduces the first ever nitric oxide booster plus advanced post-workout recovery formula in a two-stage transdermal pack. Stage 1 releases its nitric oxide boosting formula directly into the bloodstream the minute you apply it, and continues to deliver a powerful nitric oxide boost during your workout. Stage 2 is delayed time release, so the post-recovery formula starts after your workout. Go to ageforce.com and check out the new pre- and post-workout patch and get 50% off any order with the promo code SHROX. Save 50% when you use coupon code SHROX. Your shaker bottle is the most important tool in meal planning. The convenience of being able to take a ready-to-drink meal on the road is a necessity. Too often, our shaker bottle backfires on us, making what should be a convenience a disaster. Shaker Pro is the only shaker bottle in the world with a separate chamber to keep your protein powder dry until you're ready to mix it. Shaker Pro's patented design ensures that all of your powders will blend completely. Shaker Pro is BPA-free. Go to forsportlife.com today. That's the number 4, sportlife.com.
Muscle and joint pain can slow your progress to a screeching halt. That's why I use Kodiak Chiropractic Cream. Kodiak Cream won't hinder muscle growth while reducing pain and inflammation because Kodiak Cream uses only non-pharmaceutical anti-inflammatory agents proven to halt inflammation and relieve pain instantly. Kodiak Cream is great if you suffer from fibromyalgia or osteoarthritis as well. Get your Kodiak Cream today by clicking the banner ad on superhumanradio.com. Kodiak Cream. It's the only thing I use to manage pain, and you should too.
Your shaker bottle is the most important tool in meal planning. The convenience of being able to take a ready-to-drink meal on the road is a necessity. Too often, our shaker bottle backfires on us, making what should be a convenience a disaster. Shaker Pro is the only shaker bottle in the world with a separate chamber to keep your protein powder dry until you're ready to mix it. Shaker Pro's patented design ensures that all of your powders will blend completely. Shaker Pro is BPA-free. Go to 4sportlife.com today. That's the number 4, sportlife.com.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called Pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finer supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
CoQ10 is known to ramp up mitochondrial function. PQQ is documented to increase mitochondrial biogenesis and size. Now get two of the most advanced anti-aging supplements in a single capsule. Brought to you by Dr. Peter Rouse, CoQ10 and PQQ combined will give your body the mitochondrial energy and production that you need. And to make this offer even better, Superhuman Radio listeners get 20% off when you call 310-895-5385 and mention that you heard it on Superhuman Radio.
Your radio just got ripped. It's Superhuman Radio.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. My guest this hour is Stefan Guyane. We're talking about the linkage between the rewards of food and weight gain. Stefan, are you there?
Yep.
Okay. Am I on speakerphone right now?
No.
Okay.
Sound bad?
No. There was like a lot of noise in the background. I don't know if. That's okay. No. It's actually gone away. All right. Now let me ask you a question. Is there any linkage between the types of flavors, like savory flavors versus sweet flavors, that kind of influence this phenomenon, or is it different for everyone?
Well, there are definitely individual differences what foods are going to be maximally rewarding. And the way I like to think about which foods are the archetypal maximum reward foods are by looking at what people eat when they're very stressed out, what people binge on and what people eat as comfort foods. And this has actually been looked into, and it's kind of all the things that you would expect. It's ice cream, it's chocolate, it's candy, it's cake. Things like that. So they're often, but not necessarily, sweet foods. They're always very energy dense. But there are a lot of factors involved in reward, and it's not all been worked out precisely, but there are a number of things that are known to be involved, and those are energy density. So how many calories per weight of food that you're eating, fat is a reward factor, carbohydrate is a reward factor, sugar is a reward factor, glutamate, like MSG, is a reward factor.
Really?
Uh-huh. Yep. Certain
Because glutamate is a excitatory neurotransmitter, correct?
That's correct. But when you... Yeah, that's correct. Well, I mean, when you eat it, it doesn't go to your brain.
Oh, okay. All right. You know, for me, Stefan, it was, I mean, I had, when I was getting fat, I was working on it.
Mm-hmm.
I was running a business. I was very, very disappointed in the business I was running. I was depressed. I was overworked. I was frustrated and stressed out. And I remember how excited I used to be. I used to drive through Wendy's and I would ask that when the double stack hamburger came out, I would get three double stacks on a single bun. So it was six patties layered with cheese and French fries. And I would do that two or three times a day, drive through and eat it. Those are the things that I gravitated to. So obviously for me, the sensory reward mechanism was tied to those types of flavors. But clearly, as you point out, these are calorically dense. I mean, I never figured it out, but I have to believe that one of those burgers, the way I used to do it, has to be close to 2,000 calories.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do that two or three times a day.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and one of the things that's really critical about maximizing food reward that, I mean, basically these food manufacturers, they know more about what maximizes reward than I do or most anybody else does.
Yeah.
Because they have all this internal research that they do with focus groups, et cetera, to figure out exactly what keeps people coming back. But one of the main things that they really focus on that's a major factor is consistency. So, like, consistency as in making it exactly the same every time. So if you have basically the way that reward works is your mind creates associations between flavors and textures and appearance and everything about that food and the calorie load of that food. So basically, if the flavor and the appearance and everything is identical every time, you're going to create a maximum reward association with that food.
I was just going to say, it makes a greater imprint in the brain.
Exactly, because it's the same exact thing every time. So I think, yeah, you made a couple of good points. One is that it varies by individual. You know, some people are going to be drawn more to savory foods. Some people are going to be drawn more to sweet foods. And that varies by individual. And I think, you know, a lot of people understand which are the foods. You just think about it. Which are the foods that you don't feel like you have that much control over? Which are the ones that you really crave, that you really seek out, and that you'll overeat on? I think most people can sit down and figure what that is out for themselves, you know, and
yeah.
It's usually going to be the highly processed foods. So the other couple points that you brought up that I wanted to highlight was when you were talking about earlier, you divorced yourself from flavor when you were losing weight.
Right.
You know, I'm not an expert on bodybuilders, but from what I understand, one of the main techniques that they use when they're cutting fat prior to a show is to eat extremely bland food.
Right. Boiled chicken breast, tuna out of the can, yams with nothing on it. Exactly.
Yeah, exactly. And so they've arrived just by trial and error to this way of eating that reduces fat mass that's really actually very well supported by the scientific literature.
Well, to some of the most profound extremes, you have bodybuilders that are 1% body fat. That, I mean, you have to tell me leptin sensitivity has to be through the roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, there's other things involved there. I mean, I'm sure a lot of those guys are actually deliberately restricting calories.
Well, and there's also drugs involved that we've talked a lot about on the show as well that will enhance the disposal and utilization of fat. But nonetheless, the body's ability to combat that and protect its fat is pretty strong too. So the body has to be willing to let it go as well.
Exactly. So there are multiple factors, but they've clearly settled on this idea of bland food as one important piece of the puzzle. And if you look at, you know, the amazing thing to me, and another thing, point that you brought up that I wanted to highlight was you said that eventually you got used to eating these lower flavor, lower reward foods like plain oatmeal and that those became satisfying.
Right.
And that's been my experience as well as I've kind of switched to a simpler diet that you get used to it. And the fact is, you know, it makes sense because go back to our grandparents' time. Their food was simpler than the food that we eat today. They weren't awash in highly processed industrial food. Our food culture in this country has changed dramatically, even just in the last 50 years. Most of the food we eat is not simple home-cooked food made from simple ingredients like it was even just half a century ago. But then if you go back to our grandparents' grandparents' time, the diet was even simpler. So you go back further and further, and the diet gets simpler and simpler. The prevalence of obesity gets lower and lower to where it's almost non-existent 20 years ago. And and it's the same thing. If you look at any non-industrial culture, or I shouldn't say any, but almost any non-industrial culture that's eating a traditional diet and that has a healthy weight and good health in general, they usually have these very simple diets that are based around one or a few staple foods that they eat plain. You know, something like taro or coconut or rice or sweet potatoes that forms the majority of the meal. And they might have other things next to it. They might have a little bit of, you know, cooked greens or some meat or some fish or something like that. But they don't, you know, they don't have stoves where they can sit there sauteing onions and putting all kinds of spices in. The food tends to be very plain. When you look at these cultures that are eating in the way that humans would have eaten for thousands of years or even longer, or hunter-gatherers, if you want to go back even further, you know, they're roasting the meat in the fire or cooking it in whatever way they cook it with no salt, no flavors, nothing. They're just eating the meat. And, you know, are they enjoying that as much as they would enjoy a bunch of chocolate truffles? Probably not. But do they enjoy it? Yeah, probably. They're hungry, you know?
Do you think there's any linkage between the salivatory response and the reward mechanism of the food that you're about to eat that could be kind of a shot across our bow that, oh, wow, this is one of those foods that's doing this to me?
Well, that's a really interesting idea. I hadn't really thought about that. I'd have to put some thought into that and look into it, but I like that idea. It's an interesting possibility.
Okay. So we only have a couple minutes before we go into the next break. I want to start to peel this onion back a little bit now and talk about how people can utilize this information. What can we do? There are a lot of people out there who are working hard to reach their optimal physique, and they're not able to do it, and they're eating the right calories and so on and so forth, but now all of a sudden this notion, which is right under our nose all along, really, for me, it's like it speaks to a lot of people who are hitting brick walls here. Like, you must simplify your diet. You have to eat the foods that you don't want to eat because they're so bland in order to, because we know that the tongue has a lot larger role in a lot of processes in the body than we ever thought before. We know that the response to glucose load starts at the tongue. The insulin starts pumping out of the pancreas, and that's why a lot of artificial sweeteners still elicit an insulinogenic response. We know that that the signaling of sugar from the tongue starts the cellular senescence process that we now link aging and sugar together. So we know that there's a lot more going on at the tongue than we ever thought. And so why couldn't it be possible that by eating bland, the body actually is willing to reset and give up more of that fat? This is really a fantastic concept. How do people start using this?
Well, I think the easiest thing that you can do is give up the industrially processed foods. I shouldn't say easy. That's the first thing to do. And that how easy that is going to vary by individual. But, I mean, my core belief is that, in terms of body fatness and health, is that industrially processed food is the main problem. And basically, avoiding it is the first solution. So particularly those highest reward items like ice cream and cookies and chocolate and cake and candy, those things that drive behaviors that are only loosely under our conscious control, that's going to be one of the most effective tactics for anyone. And then if you want to keep going, depending on how much fat you want to lose and how you're responding to the easier steps, you can eliminate snacks. I think that that's a potentially useful one because, first of all, snacks tend to be the most highly palatable, rewarding foods.
I was just going to say, they are rewards. Look at what we use for snacks, you know?
Right, right. And if you go back to almost any lean culture, to even our own culture 30 or 40 years ago, we were eating a lot fewer snacks. I'm looking at some papers on this right now. Snacking in this country has more than doubled in the last 40 years, and that accounts for the majority of the increase in calorie intake that we've seen since that time that's really responsible for the obesity epidemic. So snacks are a big thing, and I think particularly liquid calories as well, especially sweet liquid calories like soft drinks and sweetened cocktails. I think those are things that are good to minimize. And then if you want to keep going further, you can continue removing reward factors from the diet. So I advocate for everyone that the best way to eat is to cook simple food from single ingredients in your own home. So anytime you're out at a restaurant or you're eating processed food, you know, out of a bag or from the grocery store or whatever, you are eating food that not only has probably more reward properties than you should be eating, but also I forget what the other thing was.
Well, I want to comment on something you said. Partially, I'm of the hump. Look, I have no accreditation. I'm not a learned person. I just do this radio show. But some observations that I've made. As our lives become more and more harried, as we're distracted by voicemail, email, text mail, you know, IMs, everything that's going on, people are less mindful when they're eating. People don't even remember if they ate. I've had this happen. Gee, did I just eat that? Because I was so busy working while I was eating. How can you lower the appreciation scale of food when you're not even paying attention to what you're eating? So of course you need foods that raise the noise level of the food so that you even know you're eating them. I think the first step for people is to, like you said, choose simpler foods, but that has to go hand in hand with sitting down and focusing on the meal. You can actually enjoy the meal then, even for something that's very simple, like a plain bowl of oatmeal. So there's a lot more to that. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, I want to get your opinion of something that I am a big believer in. I've been experimenting with it more and more. We're actually doing a show this week about it, which is intermittent fasting. We're talking today with Stefan Guyané. You can learn more by going to his blog. His blog is fantastic. Really, really great stuff up there, and a varied, varied a variety of information. WholeHealthSource.org. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more Superhuman Radio.
Isolator will change the way you work out forever. We've all imagined how it would be if there was an apparatus that would eliminate the hands, forearms, biceps, and triceps from training chest, back, and shoulder muscles. Well, now you can with the Isolator. The Isolator does exactly what it says. It allows you to isolate muscles to get a better, more intense workout. And they're so versatile, they work with machines or free weights. You have to see the Isolator to believe it. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Isolator Fitness banner ad today. The Isolator, the only way to train.
From the most advanced supplement company on the planet, Primordial Performance, comes the new Andro series. Andro Lean is a thermogenic aid that will promote lipolysis and incinerate body fat. Andro Mass creates explosive gains and is highly anabolic. Andro Hard will turn your muscles into granite hard stone while increasing sex drive and maximizing strength. The Andro series represents the most advanced delivery systems available anywhere. These are non-methylated and completely liver safe and non-toxic. Buy one or stack all of the new Andro series products today at primordialperformance.com.
Age Force introduces the first ever nitric oxide booster plus advanced post-workout recovery formula in a two-stage transdermal patch. Stage one releases its nitric oxide boosting formula directly into the bloodstream the minute you apply it and continues to deliver a powerful nitric oxide boost during your workout. Stage two is delayed time release, so the post-recovery formula starts after your workout. Go to ageforce.com and check out the new pre- and post-workout patch and get 50% off any order with the promo code SHROX. Save 50% when you use coupon code SHROX.
When you take real performance-enhancing supplements, your body is placed under a lot of stress. Your organs need support. If you had to take a supplement for each of the potential side effects, estrogen conversion, blood pressure, liver protection, cholesterol control, water retention, androgen receptor upregulation, kidney function, and much more, you'd have to break the bank just to pay for it all. That's until Need to Build Muscles N2 Guard. N2 Guard does all of this and more. It's the only real cycle support supplement that you'll ever need. Look, if your organs are important to you, buy N2 Guard today at needtobuildmuscle.com.
All of your favorite supplements are waiting for you at the best prices and fastest customer service at OrbitNutrition.com. Even some of the more popular supplements advertised right here on Superhuman Radio. They carry All-American EFX, LG Sciences, and Primordial Performance products at the best prices on the net. Visit OrbitNutrition.com today and check out their complete line. Give them a chance to fill your order. You won't be disappointed. OrbitNutrition.com. The best supplements in the universe are at OrbitNutrition.com. 6-Oxo is back thanks to Iron Mag Lab, the gold standard for testosterone boosting and estrogen reduction that all other over-the-counter aromatase inhibitors are compared to is 6-Oxoprogesterone. 6-Oxo is the active ingredient in the new E-Control RX from Iron Mag Labs. Iron Mag Labs has resurrected the beast that has been clinically shown to raise free testosterone by as much as 226%. As men age, estrogen rises and testosterone drops. E-Control RX can help reverse this from happening. E-Control RX is suitable for post-cycle therapy to jumpstart natural testosterone production. Get E-Control RX today. Go to IronMagLabs.com today.
Build muscle, burn fat. It's Superhuman Radio.
Ah,
it was
ocean.
A moonlit night in Old Mexico.
Welcome back.
I walked alone
to Superhuman Radio. Okay. I'm a huge proponent of intermittent fasting. I've done shows on intermittent fasting, and I know there's a lot of people out there, like my good friend, Dr. Lane Norton, who disagree with me on this particular subject. But I've had some pretty learned individuals on the show. A doctor whose first name, I want to say it's Mark, but I know his last name was McCarty, who did several research studies showing that, training while fasted, using a short-term fast, like, overnight fasting, and then training on, while fasted actually increases the efficiency of recycling amino acid pools, so it's not catabolic like so many of us think. And we're doing a show later in the week about a guy who's used intermittent fasting to just really supercharge his body. Is there any evidence that fasting has any effect on leptin sensitivity or this whole phenomenon here?
Well, I am not aware of any direct evidence that it affects leptin sensitivity, but I think there is some indirect evidence that it might. So there's been a lot of research on fasting, but most of it really has not addressed the type of fasting that most people do in the alternative health community. So the type of thing where they'll go without food for 24 hours once or twice a week, for example.
Right.
But that changed fairly recently. There was a paper that came out that compared intermittent fasting to regular calorie restriction.
Yeah.
And found that for the first time, this did not exist in the scientific literature as far as I know before that, found for the first time that the two approaches were essentially equivalent in producing fat loss. So I think that's really interesting because these people that were doing the intermittent fasting could eat as much as they want on the days where they're not fasting.
Right.
They don't have to restrict their calorie intake, but they weren't compensating to the point where they were gaining back the fat mass. And so I think that suggests that, yeah, there may be some changes, some increase in leptin sensitivity. And I think fasting is a potentially powerful thing. You know, most people live their entire lives without being in negative energy balance. So in other words, without having a day where they burn more calories than they took in. Or at least, you know, not very negative energy balance. So I think that it's potentially a healthy thing to do for the body every now and then to put yourself in a fairly negative energy balance temporarily, as a sort of, kind of a way to, I guess, a way to put it would be that it toughens your body. There's this concept called hormesis.
Hormesis, right.
Yeah, a mild stressor will increase your resistance to bigger stressors and will increase your level of health in certain regards.
Well, you know, and the father of physical culture in the United States, Bernard McFadden, used to tell people, if you have a cold, if you have a fever, if you're fighting an illness, fast. And he said, humans are the only ones that continue to eat while they're sick. Animals will fast while they're sick.
And his notion was, and it makes perfect sense, if you have a cold, if you have a fever, you have something working on you, and that is the body is paying attention to it. Let's say the threat to the body, the magnitude of the threat to the body is a 6. Well, a fast is a 10. So what ends up happening is, in order for the body to cope with the really important demand of the fast, it has to fix the other problem really quickly, which is what it does. Mm-hmm. And to go back to underscore something that you said a moment ago about fat loss, there was a study done 2 years ago that showed that intermittent fasting, every other day fasting, was as effective in increasing sirtuin production as the hypocaloric diet. Mm-hmm. You know, for so many people say, well, longevity, the link to longevity is to eat less, far less. Well, guess what? As you pointed out, fasting every other day had the same effect on sirtuin production, and on the days that the rodents were not fasting, they were allowed to eat whatever they wanted, as much as they wanted, and they did. So there's more to fasting, I think, than meets the eye. There's no doubt about it. I think there's more to it than meets the eye. Okay, well, we're coming towards the end of the interview, Stefan. So the takeaway from this is, it's not that you can't eat delicious foods. It sounds to me like you have to change your palate to what your palate becomes satisfied and thinks is delicious. Would that be a fair statement?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, the overall idea is just eat simple foods. Eat simple home-cooked foods. And the more fat you want to lose, the more simple it should be. You know, at the extreme would be just, if you want to eat a potato. Don't put anything on it. Just cook it. If you want to eat a steak, just cook the steak. Don't put anything on it. And don't expose yourself to other foods that you know you have a problem with, that you know you're drawn to, and that you know you'll overeat on.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And, you know, a light bulb went on above my head during this interview when I thought about the greatest progress that I made in fat loss. It was like the fat was dripping off of me. No one could believe it. And I was eating the most bland of diets. I was eating grilled chicken. I was eating tuna out of the can. I was eating baked sweet potatoes with nothing on them. I was eating oatmeal with nothing in it. I was eating eggs with nothing on it. I was eating these things that were almost the minimalist approach to nutrition. And, and the irony is they tasted so good to me, too.
Mm-hmm.
So it wasn't like I felt like as though I was going without, because my palate adjusted and they tasted so good to me. But yes, I just literally dripped fat for like 2.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
So I love
absolutely.
This. Yeah,
and
I love
you know,
this.
People have thrived on simple food for essentially since, you know, hundreds of thousands of years.
Yeah.
So you know, there's no reason why we need this highly palatable industrial food today to feel satisfied or happy or whatever.
Right.
I think it's, you know, for a lot of people, like you said, it's a crutch that they use to deal with their stress in their lives or with their dissatisfaction. And that's unfortunate. But it's not something that you need to live a constructive life or to be happy, you know?
Right. I agree with you 100%. Okay. Go ahead and plug your website real quick before we get off the air here.
All right. My blog is wholehealthsource.org. And it's a blog about health and nutrition from an ancestral perspective. And so I'm someone who studies body fat regulation from both a scientific biomedical standpoint and the perspective of non-industrial cultures. So I try to bring together essentially time-tested, age-old techniques for maintaining health and leanness with the latest biomedical research. And I'm constantly updating things on my blog, giving talks around at conferences, and doing interviews, and it's all completely no charge. It's all free. It's just a service that I do to help people out. And
now you teach, don't you? You teach at the University of Washington, correct?
I do research at the University. Oh,
you
of
do
your
research at the University. Okay, and your area is the metabolism and endocrinology and nutrition, correct?
Correct. Yeah.
And you can't ignore endocrinology. That's why this whole notion that calorie calories? I mean, I know we have to use calories the same way we have to use seconds and minutes, kind of increment things. But the reality is calories play a much smaller role in the development of fat than the actual foods themselves and their relationship to hormonal responses. Is that an accurate statement?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I would rephrase that and say that the amount of calories that are coming into your fat tissue and the amount that's leaving depends on a lot of factors. And one of those factors is the type of food that you're putting, a major factor is the type of food that you're putting in your body. So basically, the quality of food that you're eating determines the energy balance going in and out of your fat tissue.
Gotcha. Okay. Listen, Stefan, thank you very, very much for coming on Superhuman Radio today.
Thank you, Carl.
Okay. All right, and we also want to thank Dr. Matt Andry, and you can visit Dr. Matt Andry's website is mdweightworks, WORX.com, and of course, Stefan Guyanet's website, wholehealthsource.org. Great website, great articles up there. Check it out. We'll have another great show for you tomorrow. See you then.